I mean, whatever happens today depends on who shows up, and that's starting with me. I mean, what comes out of me depends on who shows up, and I don't know that in advance. So there'll be no point in preparing anything, even if I did that sort of thing, which I don't. Although today I did, for a change, I did actually put something in the email and gave a title to the event, and that was, well, just because there seemed to be quite a strong theme that around the day of events, and seeing it's the kind of theme that I take to like a fish to water, thought I would well, announce it in that regard, that there's the kind of waters that would be swimming in today, the deathly kind. Although it's a week late because last weekend was Day of the Dead. Better late than never. And I think part of it was in the audio, I mean, mentioned in the audio was realizing again how difficult a subject it is for people. Not that that might sound a bit perverse, I want to talk about it because it's difficult, but for people, but don't mean it that way. Just that if it is difficult, then it's worth. Practice makes perfect, like learning to swim. You have to get in. Can't actually learn to swim by being told or shown diagrams or anything else except getting in the water is not going to work. So the waters of death, I would say we're already in them, and this is just coming to me now. One of the reasons, or the main reason we're already in them, is because we all know people who have died. And the older you are, the more people you will know. And the more deeply you care about the people that you know who've died, the deeper you are in those waters. I suppose at a certain point, if you knew enough people that you cared deeply enough about who died, you would be more in death than in life. Which would seem to be the way to go, because at a certain point you're going to be entirely in death. We are all the way. And it's a one-way journey unless you want to indulge fantasies about reincarnation or that sort of thing. I say fantasies not because I know they're not true, but because I know that I don't know if there's any truth in them, and I don't really trust anyone who thinks that they do know. I think the only way to know what happens when we die is to be dead in life. And that, I mean, I used that phrase in the email, but I realized it could have, well, it could have negative connotations. I mean, there's plenty of people walking around who are dead in life, and it's the zombie apocalypse. But hopefully, clearly, I don't mean it that way. I mean it the opposite of that way. To be fully alive is to allow oneself to die in life, to die to life in a certain sense, as in let life take over one's consciousness completely and give up one's lifelong culturally conditioned illusion of having some sort of separate, discrete existence as an individual. Separate from life, which when I put it that way, it's tautological, it's self-evident. We can't possibly be separate from life, except maybe by becoming zombies, becoming kind of agents or instruments of some anti-life force. And that does seem to be the trend in our current world and time. And that's one of the incentives to want to talk about death is well, there's a plague coming, and it's not called COVID. So anyway, yeah, with that going on a large scale and out there, and more people signing up to die, I would say literally, well, this is a bit sensitive, but anyway. Potentially, literally, in terms of volunteering to take something into their bodies that has provenly adverse effects, and that this being part of an agenda, possibly, to reduce the population drastically, then as that's rolling out on the world stage, for those with eyes to see, well, there's something else that could be happening parallel to that, which is the inverse of that, which is in fully embracing life by fully accepting death. So I'm aware, having said that, that there's a possible convergence there and that we're all going to die anyway. So in terms of taking something into one's body that might harm one, the issue really isn't is that it might kill us, because life will do that anyway. The issue is what are we becoming complicit with by doing so? Like choosing life rather than choosing death is, well, I mean, that's the main thing. And then there are ways that one can choose life and sacrifice oneself. So there isn't a clear line here between that's visible between those who are choosing life and choosing death. And it couldn't be reduced to something as simple as, and you know, those who take a vaccine and those who don't. But I think it does have to do with those who are aligning themselves with a system that is anti-life, and those who are willing to risk their lives by uncoupling from that system. And like Moses with his promise, chosen people, made a promise to them, going out into the complete unknown, into the wilderness, to face possible death, but willing to do so because anything is better than slavery to a corrupt, sorcerous system. But yeah, I wanted to bring it back to what seemed to be the richer focus today, being the ways in which we are coming to know death through love, knowing and loving those who have died, and how that love continues, of course, after those that we love die. It doesn't just end, doesn't die with them, and potentially, I said, doesn't die with us either. But as long as we're here, we still feel that love, and therefore that love still has an object. The only thing is that it's not a physical object anymore, it's a metaphysical object. So we can't love the body or the personality of the person anymore. We might have loved the memory of them. We can't love them in the sense of a reciprocal relationship, but we can love the soul of that person, at least with the faith or the trust that that soul continues somewhere, somehow. As I didn't know I was going to talk about any of this, so I'm just trying to feel my way through it, and how I feel it relates to the possibility of connecting to each other in this life while we're alive at that same level, so that we're loving with our souls, loving each other's souls and not our personalities or our bodies or our identities. And thereby we're awakening, enlightening, bringing to light, bringing to consciousness a soul network that we're part of and that transcends death. But maybe only if we establish those connections. Potentially transcends death. I just checked that my microphone was working, because although it's clear that you're all listening to me, still the feeling I was having was that well, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but what occurred to me anyway was that even if my microphone wasn't working and you couldn't hear anything I was saying, it wouldn't really matter because of what I'm talking about. Is that the connections and the communications that really count are not through this technology, and they're not through the language. And I mean, that just brought home how distant we are in this particular context. I mean, literally, of course, we're in different parts of the world, seeing as there's a number of people from Australia here today, then that's as far away as can be and still be on the planet. And then we're using the technology that itself creates distance. Even if we were in the same house, this would be obviously a very distancing way to connect. And then you've got language, which also reinforces distance. Language is about defining things as different. It couldn't work otherwise. And so on. So all these different layers that come between us, we could say that it's quite remarkable. There's a very wide spectrum in the sense that this is practically the most distant way that we could possibly connect in the history of the human race right now. And yeah, it's also, there's also something else happening potentially that's pointing to the deepest way that human beings can connect, ever have connected, ever will connect. Like the source of what we are, is also our final destination, back to death. And as far as I know, as in union, you know, we come from a unified whole, we break off into fragments, those fragments incarnate like sparks of a fire, and then they, you know, roam around in their little containers thinking that they're separate. But then when the containers break, the sparks go back to the source. Now, the objective of Tikkun is to extract the sparks from the containers and unify them in life rather than wait until they're broken by death or something like that. So then there's a unification that's conscious rather than one that is unconscious. Anyway, I was going to say something else, which was to do with the Dave events, which that what he has said about the events this weekend is that he wants to restore death in our consciousness to a more true understanding as something that isn't to be feared and something that isn't to be seen as a negative, like birth. I mean, birth is a bloody affair and a painful one and traumatic one in our current social conditions, but we certainly wouldn't argue it was a negative thing. I mean, obviously, then you have to unpack that one. None of us would be here without birth, but none of us would be here without death. I think you can say that, or I'm going to say that, even though it's not as obvious why. I would still say that it's still experientially true. Because if nobody died, well, there'd be no room for any new souls. So there'd just be a few of us who'd been around since the beginning, thinking, geez, I'm sick of your face. When are they going to send some new bodies down here? So yeah, it seems like a very fittingly ambitious or rich, creative challenge to approach death cognitively and perceptually and experientially, hopefully eventually experientially, as something not to be feared. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, they say. So I'll say that fear of death is the beginning of wisdom too, because you have to know death to attain wisdom. I'm just saying that, not necessarily true, but let's say it is true. And the way that we're configured currently psychologically, we can't think about death without fear. And if you're thinking about death and you're not afraid, you're probably not really thinking about it. And I could almost be channeling my dead brother there in much softer terms than he would ever put it. But he was somebody who really did think about death. He thought about it so much that it consumed him. So I'm not recommending that, because it has to be an evolution to think about it and feel the fear of it, but then go into the fear and see where it's coming from. And we may find that it's coming not from the future, some future event that is so terrifying that we can feel it in the present, but from the past, that we had near-death experiences as infants that imprinted us in a kind of lockdown system that couldn't open up to the flow of life, and thereby know death with all of it, with every cell in its body, and know that death has no sting. Because if you're connected to the life force fully, you know that death can't snuff you out. Bodies come and go, but the life force continues. And consciousness potentially can continue too. Or maybe it does one way or another anyway, but I mean, it can continue in a way that is as full of delight as the earthly incarnation. Well, fuller even, perhaps. Anyway, that's my optimistic point of view today. I'd say it's based on a mix of experience and faith.